that usually means. We've got the luck of the Irish on our side. Dave O'Brien is here in studio with the Chronicle Telegram. Dave joins us on the local beat brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Valentine's Day is just 3 days away. And if you haven't gotten a gift yet, well, you're in luck. Because Vandermark Jewelers is ready to rock and roll for you here in Elyria on Broad Street, right across from the hospital. They're a trusted name in jewelry. And if you stop by, you'll see why. If you come in to the showroom with the equation, hey, look, I'm not quite sure what to get, you let Jim and Bob and the entire gang know what your budget is. They'll find something for you. Not only will they find something for you, they'll find something awesome for you. And Jim's actually going to be here in studio with us tomorrow, so looking forward to that. But that's tomorrow. We've got Dave O'Brien here in studio with us today. Dave, how are you, my man?
I'm doing all right, Paul. Thanks.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot to talk about, as always, and you know, you actually, when you left the studio last week, you mentioned you were working on a couple of different things. And boy, that next day in the Chronicle Telegram, I think you pumped out about three or four stories. And I thought, okay, well, we've got a few things that we can certainly load up on the next time Dave's in studio. So let's begin with the settlement between Oberlin College and Joy Correga Mason. Now, there was a settlement there. She was fired a few years back. So for those that haven't heard this story, what can you tell us about it?
So this is a situation that that really was kind of one of those things real early on kind of blew up online. But it was basically what happened was Joylyn Correga Mason was an assistant professor at Oberlin College, she was there for about 3 years before she was fired by the Board of Trustees, and that was over what was termed as failing to meet the academic standards Oberlin requires of its faculty. And failing to demonstrate intellectual honesty. What this basically means is that Ms. Correga Mason had posted some things online, primarily on Facebook and I think a little bit on Twitter as well, in which she blamed the 9/11 terrorist attacks on Jews. And now that in and of itself, while a conspiracy theory and pretty much, there's no evidence to confirm that I've ever seen. Basically, that's freedom of speech. But when you continue to do that, and when you also, you have Oberlin College being a private organization, there's certain standards that you have to meet. And I think that's a lot of what came up. Initially Oberlin College defended her and said, hey, she's allowed to have these beliefs. She's allowed to express them. We don't agree. Some of them, we think are controversial and repellent and repulsive and that kind of thing. But eventually on down the line, she was put on administrative leave and then dismissed from the university. She then sued in federal court, including former president, Marvin Krizlov, the dean of colleges, arts and sciences at the time, the board of trustees chairman. She was demanding about $885,000 in damages. Now, just recently, as of Friday, last Friday, there was an entry on the federal court docket that said that the case had been settled. Now, we don't have any more information about how much the settlement was for. I put out a call to Oberlin College. They had no comment. I also put out a message to Ms. Craig Mason's attorney, who did not respond by my deadline, and I have not heard from him since then. So this is basically brings a close to this case. A lot of times what happens in court settlements like this is that they don't release what the terms of the settlement were, whether or not that's for the reason that they don't want people to just say, hey, give me $1 million, but I'll settle for $50,000 for whatever my complaint is. But also a lot of times there's kind of a gag order that's placed on a lot of these, because they have the settlements, just they don't get disclosed. The records are sealed. It's a little different when you have a public entity where an argument might be made in court where, yeah, sure, if this were, Kent State University or Ohio State University, you might be able to get your hands on that settlement, on that settlement agreement. But in this case, not so much.
Interesting. A lot of layers to that story. And
very much, yeah.
I think it's fascinating how neither side was really willing to comment, or at least comment at the time of the deadline, and you still haven't heard much from either side since.
No, and it's just one of those things. I mean, when you cover courts, you kind of get used to that kind of thing. Just basically saying, terms of the settlement were not disclosed. A lot of times, I've had instances where where attorneys have said to me, hey, look, you know, I'd love to tell you, but the agreement says that the settlement is contingent on the fact that I don't tell you. You know, and I haven't even been able to get any attorneys to say, hey, you know, off the record, is there some other place that I can find this information, you know, where you might say, oh, yeah, that's accurate. No such luck. So it's one of those things where, again, we don't know how if Oberlin paid out or did anything. We just frankly don't know.
Well, speaking of courts, what are the details on this new court docket, which helps mentally ill defendants in Lorain County?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting thing, and the state has for the past couple of years really been pushing as a result of some of the justices on the Ohio Supreme Court have taken a real interest in these specialized court dockets that focus on people who, for whatever reason, and in Lorain County we have a veterans court docket where veterans who have addiction and mental health issues can get specialized treatment, specialized attention to their problems. Well, now there is a separate court docket for mental health issues. So anybody who's got a mental illness, who's accused of a felony crime, can now appear and they will get recommended to potentially take part in Judge James DeMiraldi's court docket. It's about, at this point, about once a month. And they're looking to get about 40 people who have just been on the docket who, for various reasons, whether or not they maybe assault, were in some sort of distress and police and EMTs showed up and maybe they assaulted a police officer or assaulted an EMT, and caught a felony charge, or if they were dealing drugs, but it's because of a mental illness that they have, any other number, any sort of crimes. Now, there are some crimes that won't be considered, you won't be considered for the docket, but some of the lower level, felony crimes might be considered for that docket, where you will be found, kind of specialized treatment, medication might help, just even simply like therapy might help, talking to a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a social worker. Probation officers, the Lorain County Jail, where unfortunately a lot of people just with mental health problems end up because they commit crimes, or because they're drinking too heavily, or because they're addicted to drugs, because they're trying to get rid of some emotional or sort of mental pain, or they hear voices, or they can't afford their medication, so they're off their meds and they go out and they act up in public. For any of these typical reasons, you might get somebody who gets put into the jail. So the jail is not a place where people ought to have to go to get mental health help. So if you have a specialized court docket that says, hey, we're going to get you a counselor, we're going to talk to your probation officer, the judge is going to talk to you, every couple weeks, once a month, see how you're doing, see if you need, court ordered treatment, if there's a program we can get you into, and on down the line, if it's found out that, yeah, indeed, their mental health issues were what caused them to commit these crimes, they might be able to get their record expunged, get the charges dismissed, be able to go back out into society, get, job placement help, that kind of thing. So it's a little more of a personal touch, on this program. And Judge Maraldi and I had a nice little interview, and he talked about how he's really excited for this program. Other judges, probation officers, counselors, anybody who is involved with someone who has these kinds of mental health issues, who might be able to recommend them to that court because they are facing felony charges, are able to do so. And then there's about, I would say there's about half a dozen to maybe 10 people who are involved in this court at present. So they're meeting later this month, and I'm going to continue to follow that up and see how it goes.
Judge Maraldi's a fascinating guy. He really is. And I know
Absolutely.
He's really been instrumental with the recovery court. So, I mean, this certainly doesn't surprise me to hear his name tied in with this as well. And I thought it was fascinating. You were mentioning, look, too many times, if you're mentally ill and you end up going to jail, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. And
no.
I think that's a big part of this.
No, and that's a thing where now the deputies and the nurses and the jail administrators, they have to deal with folks who maybe they have some sort of phobia, or maybe they have some sort of other mental health issue. They're not psychologists. They're not counselors. They're not necessarily trained, and through no fault of their own. But they often end up dealing with people who are, behaving inappropriately in public, you know, or who are arrested for some reason, and then you find out, okay, their view of reality is not the same as maybe my view of reality, or there's just something going on in their brain chemistry, you know, in their head somewhere that they need more specific help for, and oftentimes, unfortunately, you know people who do kind of, they just end up in a place that's not equipped to help them out. And I think this is one more of those steps, as we've seen, you know, with recovery court, with veterans treatment court, where, you know, it could be beneficial. And you know, I'll keep following the story and see how, and you know, see if I can follow some people through the system.
Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joins us here on the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. All right, Dave, we're kind of bouncing all over the place, the host of different topics here today. Before we get to the scanner stories, I want to revisit something that we discussed a few months back. Where are we at with the county in the process of trying to get rid of all these abandoned fuel tanks? We had some fun talking about this a few months back, but
we did,
there have been a couple of developments in the story.
So the latest development on this is, the county is still trying to look for places, look for funding, whether it's through federal agencies like the US EPA, or whether it's through the state of Ohio, you know, through the state EPA, to get rid of some of these abandoned underground fuel storage tanks that crop up on some of these properties. And it's not just maybe you know, like a house that gets torn down and there's an old fuel oil tank in the ground. But it's more so to the point of, you know, some of these commercial properties. Like, there's a gas station down in Oberlin. They were talking about it at Lorain County Commissioners meeting the other day. There are several tanks in the ground down there. And in order to get that property fit to be sold to somebody who might want to develop it, if you buy it and then you find out, oh, there's these underground storage tanks that have been leaking for years and may well still have some fuel in them, you're now responsible for cleaning that up. A lot of private owners don't want to handle the hassle, the cost, you know, the time that it takes to do that. So the county's trying to step in, help get some of these properties cleaned up, trying to find federal or state money to do that. Now, this particular property down in Oberlin, the county had entered into a $5,000 contract with an agency that was going to come in, you know, investigate whether or not there's pollution there, you know, whether there's leaching from these abandoned tanks, and found out that it was going to take about $20,000 to actually get that work done, so that they could qualify for a grant from the state in order to go in, pull those tanks out, you know, fill in the soil with better soil, and then get that property up and on the market. There's another property out on Baumhart Road, you know, kind of on the southwestern side of Lorain. It's the old E&L Transport Company. Now, the county got that property based on the fact that E&L Transport hadn't paid their property taxes for a long time, so it was a tax foreclosure. So now the county owns the property, is leasing it to Ohio Edison, getting a little bit of income there, you know, to kind of help keep up the property. But again, bunch of underground storage tanks out there, fuel oil, just things you can't have buried in the ground if you want that to be a viable commercial property. So again, they're trying to find some money. There were some issues with actually finding somebody who's willing to pay the money, either the state or the feds. So the county community development is still working on trying to convince the state or federal government to help the county out with that. Maybe turn that into another, you know, industrial property, light industrial, put up a warehouse, do something like that out there. You know, get some more jobs coming into the county. So it's kind of the very base, and it's a little bit dry, not real fascinating, but that's where you deal at the very bottom level of economic development. You got to have property that people want to buy, they want to put things on, and they want to hire people to come work in their place. So it's again, not real compelling radio, but at the same time, it's important. These are the kinds of things that the commissioners deal with on a weekly, you know, monthly basis.
Good stuff. Well, we've come to that point in the interview, my friend, where we have to take a look at this week's scanner story. So over the last 6 days, I'm sure you've come up with some pretty good ones here. What kinds of goodies do you have for us this week scanner stories?
Well, Dayline Lakewood, female would like to speak to an officer about her husband. She had an Uber picking her up, and her husband, he canceled it.
Oh, boy.
Don't do that.
Oh, the heart of Valentine's Day, too, man. That's a heartbreaking story. Jeez.
She wanted to go somewhere, and I, for whatever reason, you know, he said, no, I don't think you're going anywhere. I don't know if that's a police matter, you know, but someone's in the doghouse, right?
Sounds like a personal matter for sure. Dave, as always, my friend, a pleasure to have you here in studio, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good to me, Bull. We'll see you then.
All righty. Again, that's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle-Telegram joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. The local beat is brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. You won't have any personal matters if you visit Jim and Bob and the entire gang at Vandermark Jewelers. They'll make sure that you'll walk out with something outstanding and affordable, and you can avoid having to cancel your wife's Uber, wherever she just might be going.